Hey everyone, it's R.R. Campbell, your host of the listener-supported R.R. Campbell Writescast, checking in before this episode begins to share some exciting news. My debut novel, Accounting for It All, is to be published with Nine Star Press in November of 2018. Accounting for It All is the story of adult film star turned accountant Robin Weathers, who must evade an IRS investigation into a money laundering scheme to which she was unwittingly a part. Oh, and the woman Robin's always considered to be the love of her life? Yeah, she's back in the picture, finally ready to try to make things work. For more about Accounting for It All, you can visit rrcampbellwrites.com/books. That's rrcampbellwrites.com/books. I look forward to sharing Robin's story with all of you in November 2018. All right, time for your regularly scheduled programming. Thanks for listening. Hey there, and welcome to episode 3 of Novel Approaches here on the Writescast Network. I'm Writescast Network founder and Novel Approaches co-host, R.R. Campbell. In this episode, co-host Sione Ashleman and I were joined by Kristen Oakley, author of Carpe Diem Illinois and God on Mayhem Street. Sione and I were both grateful Kristen could join us for this Novel Approaches conversation on creating character. I think all three of us had some interesting approaches to share, so let's get right to them. Stay tuned after the episode for a heads up on what we'll cover in the next installment of Novel Approaches. Thanks for listening. Today we are joined, of course, by Kristen Oakley, who listeners might remember from episode 9 of the Writescast. So Kristen, thank you for coming back on the show.
Thanks for having me again, Ryan. It's wonderful to be here. Hi, Kristen. Hi, Sione.
But let's start talking about character right away with you, Kristen, and talk about, you know, the soul of character and what characteristics, attributes, attitudes, whatever it is you want to call them, what do you see as forming the heart of character?
There's about 6, I would say, right off the bat. But I think the main one, and maybe the one that people need to focus on at first when they're first creating their character, is to concentrate on what that character's desire or goal is. What is their purpose? What are they going for? What's their motivation in the story? Who or what is going to try to stop them from achieving their goal? And how is that going to work out? So if you can focus on their desire, their goal, that will lead to a lot of other answers for you. In addition to that, then they need strengths and weaknesses. And a lot of first-time novelists in particular find the strengths pretty easy to write because we want to make our characters awesome and we want the readers to love them, and so we think by making them awesome they'll love them, and that's true. They do need some strengths. They need something that they can fall back on in bad times, but they also need weaknesses. They need to be human, otherwise they're boring. They're just not somebody we want to read about. So those are a little trickier sometimes to discover and find out about your character, but you definitely want to add weaknesses in that. Then the big thing maybe a lot of people have already heard about, but it's the fatal flaw. So in addition to other little human flaws, there should be one flaw that'll do them in. And if they don't overcome that flaw, that's going to be the end of the character. And I think a good example of that in particular is Harry Potter from the Harry Potter series by J.K. Rowling. He definitely doesn't think that the rules apply to him, and it gets him in seriously dangerous situations in every single book. But the beauty of that is also his strength, because without breaking the laws, he would not succeed in many cases. So if you can manage both of that, that your fatal flaw is going to do you in, and also overcome a lot of obstacles, then that's really good writing. And then I would add 2 more things. One is really coming to the dilemma. And one book I'm going to quote from is The 90-Day Novel by Alan Watt. And he says that a dilemma is a problem that cannot be solved without creating another problem. Problems are solved. Dilemmas are resolved through a shift in perception. So you've got a dilemma, and you've got usually it's 2 worst case scenarios. You have to make a decision. What am I going to do? And then by making that decision, the character has changed. The example I like to use for that is Katniss Everdeen in The Hunger Games. And at the end of the first book, spoiler alert, sorry, is Katniss and Peeta, she either has to kill him or he has to kill her. And she decides, nope, they're going to commit suicide together. So she's got this dilemma. It's not good no matter what she picks. And she overcomes that by coming up with her own solution. So to round that out, I would say desire a goal first. That's probably the easiest thing to focus on. And then you need the strengths, weaknesses, fatal flaw. What's the big dilemma? And how is that character going to change at the end? Where are they going to come to? What's their goal? Have they resolved that? All of those things. So that's the basics.
And I think all six of those areas are really great places to start. And I'm sure that they'll guide us through the rest of this conversation. But I'm curious now to turn this over to Sione and see what she might have to add on this front. You know, what are the attributes, the characteristics that you're looking to form the soul of any character when you're editing a work, for example?
I definitely have some things in common with Kristen's must-have list. I think about three main things. How will this person understand what's happening or what's being said in the story? How will they react? And then how do they talk and think? And so that for me is the basis of it. And there's a lot to unpack under there. How will they understand what's happening and how will they react? That's influenced by a ton of things, including, as Kristen mentioned, the goal, motive, and stakes, and the fatal flaw. It's also influenced by how they deal with emotion. So it can be influenced by their physical appearance, can be influenced by their name, their background, which is a whole litany of things that I know Kristen has a really great handout on. So where they're from and what their parents were like and their relationship with their parents, how they were raised, their education, their religion, their hobbies, their field of work, things like that. One of the tools that I really like for understanding people and therefore characters is called nonviolent communication, NVC. It was a philosophy, I guess, a conflict resolution philosophy created by Marshall Rosenberg. And have either of you heard of that before?
No.
I have not, no.
I think I wouldn't have either if my mother hadn't been teaching it for like the last 20 years. But the basic premise of nonviolent communication is that in any given situation, a person is just doing the best they can with the skills that they have. And that everybody is a product of their experiences. And I think probably when I say that, you can see how that relates to how I think about character. And then the way that NVC breaks down communication is that a person observes something, they see something, they hear something. That's number one. Number two, they make meaning of it or make a judgment about what's happening. And that's how they understand what's going on or what's being said. And that ties back into my number one point earlier. And how they make meaning is based on that background and culture, their past experiences in similar situations, their trigger points, things like that. Number three for the NVC, ways that communication happens, is in response to the meaning that we make of something, we have a feeling about it. And that feeling comes from a sense of a need being met or not met. And NVC needs are similar to the Maslow's hierarchy, but a little bit different. There's a whole huge list of needs that people have in common. And it ranges for everything from everything like survival things like food and water and shelter, but also to like belonging and acceptance and understanding and love and joy and fun and things like that. And the needs is where that connects to characters' motives for me. And then the last part in that communication philosophy is that there's a strategy or an action that results from the observation, meaning, making, feeling, and need. And that will be based on the character's temperament, their goals, and then also their background and culture. I know that was a lot of probably new information. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that sounds great. A lot of it seems like it's semantics too, because I think there's a lot of connection between what you were saying and what I was saying too, with the desire, the goal is the same as the needs. And then their strategies and how do they change and how they develop. So yeah, I think it's a good way, another way of looking at this and approaching it.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I've been giving a lot of thought to is what you just mentioned, Kristen, about the goal and where does that come from? And I think that needs are more about motive and the goal is more about strategy, because the way that most people work is that they get stuck on a particular strategy for getting a need met. So, for example, what I want is respect and security, and the way that I'm going to get that is by getting this high-powered job. You see what I mean?
Right. Well, and then there's the difference between wants and needs. Oftentimes in the better books, a character thinks they want one thing and then doesn't realize what they really need. And hopefully by the end of the book, they realize that.
Yes, exactly. And that's why I find it really helpful, both in life and with my characters, to make that distinction between the strategies and the needs. Because I think that's exactly right, what you're saying, is that we get stuck on strategies and we think that's what we need, but actually there are different ways to get those needs met, those human needs met.
And I'll throw this in as maybe a bonus exercise, because that gets slightly out of the bounds of the character conversation, but Sion, all of this about nonviolent communication strategies sounds like it could turn into a really neat approach for writing dialogue. So, for example, if you have a scene between two characters and you can determine, you know, some of this background in advance, you can literally walk through steps 1 through 5 over the course of almost every line of dialogue, or by the time the scene is completed itself, and you'll have your plot moving in a whole new direction. You'll have a new understanding between these characters, both their, you know, wants, needs, motives, all of this will have been exposed over the course of that brief scene. And I think at that point, you know, we are really bringing those characters to life. So I think there's absolutely something to this idea of nonviolent communication and what it can do for us in our manuscripts.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. Yeah, there's more that I'm going to add on that one further into the conversation, but for sure. So those are, I just kind of unpacked there. My first two points, how will the character understand what's happening and what's being said, and how will they react? And then the other thing that I mentioned was, how do they think and talk, which translates to voice. And I actually have a couple cheats for this. Voice, for me, it comes through in vocabulary. It comes through in accent. It comes through in the character's fluency in the language. For example, if it's not their first language or if they're not used to speaking very much. And then also, one of the tricks I use is to think about what metaphors might this person think in. And the metaphors might come from hobbies or where they grew up, like the setting that they grew up in, or their field of work, things like that. And so thinking about metaphor, that's one of my hacks for distinguishing characters' voices. How does character A's metaphors in their narration, if it's close third person, thinking about the metaphors that they use in their narration. And then the other cheat for voice that I have is, if I'm trying to write a character who is quite different from, speaks quite differently from how I speak, I'll often try and find a character in a TV show or film, or maybe like an actor. I've seen an actor interview with an actor that I think might talk a lot like my character, or I might even draw from real life, somebody that I know from real life, and listen to that person talking and get their voice stuck in my head, and then just apply that when I'm writing the character. And that affects the accent, the vocabulary they use, and also the sentence structure patterns that they use, which is another important part of voice.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot to unpack on this topic. And I think one of the things that can often be a challenge is, of course, we present, you know, these different strategies for knowing what perhaps the soul of our character might be. But then, of course, we have to find a way to get that on the page. So I'm curious, and let's go back to Kristen here. So how much about your characters do you like to know before writing? And then how much of it kind of comes out through the discovery process of writing a draft itself?
Well, it really depends, for me at least, on the project I'm working on. And so in my first book, Carpe Diem, Illinois, I thought that the character would be the town itself. The book talks about unschooling, and so it tends to be a controversial issue. And people were offended when it was first being written in a lot of ways, particularly school teachers. So I had to kind of adjust. And I took a class at Right by the Lake at UW-Madison with Christine DeSmet, and she said, at the time, it was 2009, Da Vinci Code came out, and they were saying that I really couldn't present my book this way. I couldn't really take on public schools. But I thought, you know what, if he's taken on Catholic, you know, the Catholic Church, why can't I, you know, take on the public schools? So she mentioned to our class that there's a way he did this. And the way he did it was he elevated his protagonist to the part where he's actually kind of neutral, Robert Langdon. He does know a bit about the coding and everything else, but he's pretty neutral when it comes to the religious aspects. So what I needed to do was have a character who didn't really know much about homeschooling and really didn't care one way or the other. So I elevated, I had a secondary character named Leo Townsend, who was a journalist. So I thought, well, that's perfect. He developed because I needed him to be neutral in this and for the reader to experience what this kind of lifestyle was through somebody who wasn't biased in any way. So that's how he developed. In my current series, the first book in my trilogy, The Devil Particle, my main character asked to be written. I know that sounds really crazy, but you will find many, many authors that say, there's this character that's just hitting me over the head. He needs to be, or she needs to be written, and there's nothing I can do about it. He came out of a short story. I was in a prompt club, and I wrote this short story based on a photograph, and I loved him. I just immediately loved him, and I thought, no, he needs his story told. So for me, it just really depends on what happens, what comes to me, what appeals to me. And then as I, you said this discovery process in writing the draft itself. So yeah, I discover more and more about the character as I write them. With Devil Particle, it came really easily. I had his whole story in my head and wrote it pretty quickly. The second book in the trilogy has taken a little bit more time, so that guy I don't know as well, but I'm learning about him. Yeah, so I think it really just depends. I would suppose every writer might give you a totally different answer.
And I'm sure that we could get a ton of different responses, but I really liked this idea of characters asking to be written, because that's something that I can relate to really directly. In fact, for my debut novel, Accounting for It All, which will be coming out in late 2018, the original story, as I envisioned it, did not feature a romance thread in a real primary way at any point. In fact, I had written, I want to say it was about the first 10 chapters of the book before I decided that my main character, Robin, needed a sort of confidant, you know, a childhood friend maybe that could be present for the scenes that took place in the past. And what I realized is as I wrote in this character of a confidant, she kind of jumped off the page, and it felt like there was this truly deep, deep connection between her and my main character, Robin. And after putting some time into it, I realized, wow, I think that there's a lot more that can be explored here. And then, of course, the relationship between Robin and Sarah becomes one of the major plot threads that runs throughout the entire novel now as it exists, and is what really drives Robin to make some of the biggest, you know, take some of the biggest leaps and also make some of her biggest mistakes as she progresses throughout her timeline. So I think that there's something really to be said for this idea that characters sometimes do ask to be written. And I think that no matter how much planning we might do in advance, it's important sometimes to trust our gut and trust those characters and trust the relationships that sort of blossom before us and let them lead us where they may.
Definitely.
So, I was going to add that I think that idea of trust is really important too. And it's something that I know I've struggled with in the past, and a lot of writers that I know have struggled with it. And this leads into actually my my answer to this question, because for me, there's a danger in doing too much pre-work for a couple of reasons. But one of them is because if I feel like I need to know absolutely everything about a character before I start writing, I mean, I just, like, you can't know everything. I mean, you could spend 10 years writing a detailed character biography and then never get to writing the actual book, although maybe that turns out to be the book. I don't know. But yeah, so trusting that after doing a little bit of pre-work, the character will reveal themselves during the discovery draft is really key for me. And I also, the other reason it's dangerous for me is because characters reveal more about themselves and act in ways that I did not expect and say things that I did not think were going to come out of their mouths. I need to be open to discovering them instead of thinking that I already know them. And so that's the other reason that I don't like to do too much pre-work. And then when it comes to the things that we're talking about and really getting to know who these characters are, after I have written a discovery draft, I'll go back and, I mean, often my characters are pretty erratic and need a lot of refinement, but I'll just keep asking myself, why is this character behaving this way? Why are they saying this? Going back to goals and motivations, right, Kristen?
Right.
And is the way that they're behaving consistent with what I know about them or not? And if it isn't, you know, because it can be new information, then I need to make decisions about whether to incorporate that new information and change what I had, or whether that new information that's coming through doesn't actually serve the story very well, in which case that's when you need to, what is it? Kill your darlings.
Kill your darlings. Kill your darlings.
Well, and I think that's probably the hardest thing, too. You've lived with this story a particular way for months or years, and then all of a sudden you realize it's not working, or this character doesn't want it to work this way, or whatever it is. Or, yeah, you've got this extra information, and then what do you do with it? It's hard, which is, in your case, you're the editor. I'm sure you help a lot of people with that, or critique groups, or beta readers all can help with that, too. But, of course, it comes down to the writer's decision, but that can be tough. That can be tricky.
Absolutely. And you said, you know, the character doesn't want it to be that way. And I can relate to that completely. I was writing a vampire romance trilogy, and the antagonist from the second book was going to show up again in the third book. And I just was having the hardest time getting him on the page. So finally I did an interview with him. I did a character interview. I was like, why are you not cooperating? He's like, because I'm dead. I was like, oh. So now I need to rework my plot. Great.
That's funny. And I think that there's some really great things that even I can respond to in there, which is that, one, this idea that there's danger in doing too much pre-work. And Sione, I know that you and I, in previous conversation, you know, I've been the one who talks about, I like to have this big plan and I figure everything out in advance, and I really like to have this nice tidy blueprint for myself, and that kind of bleeds into character and it's every part of the novel. But as I've actually been writing my current work in progress, I went out of the way to develop character on really deep levels. I actually used a modified version of the handout that I know you happen to see that Kristen made and used at a conference that I attended back in 2016, and I used that to kind of put out character attributes and figure out everything for the main character, his love interest, there was going to be a sidekick, I had to figure out their parents, I had, you know, like, I went to town with it, and I was convinced that, all right, I'm going to be able to take this right into my manuscript, anytime I have a question, I've got something to refer to, and then guess what happened? I start writing the manuscript, and so much of this just kind of changes as the characters go from being what is kind of a resume, just what they look like on paper, to showing up for, I guess, I don't know, a job interview in your exploratory draft, and then if they shine and they're going to be able to stick around, they make it to the final draft and they've got the job, quote unquote. I don't know, it's kind of a weird metaphor, but it's been amazing that I went from being this guy who was super hardline on like, all right, I'm going to do all this pre-work, to looking at the next novel that I plan on writing where, yeah, I'll definitely get an idea for some of these really core components that we've discussed, you know, in question one, and I'm sure we'll continue to come up over the course of this conversation, but I don't see myself going super hard with like the, I must know every last detail and about where they were on this date and blah, 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 because it was cool. It was a good exercise, but I did lose some time when I could have just been writing the manuscript at that point.
Yeah, and I'll just point out that what you were just talking about connects to what Kristen said earlier about it's different for each book. I agree with that completely. And it also, I think, ties into what we were talking about regarding trust and trusting that it's okay to have a different process each time and to kind of go with your gut to a certain extent and let things unfold as they need to.
Yeah, I totally agree with that too. And those exercises you're talking about, Ryan, and particularly like character sketches, there's some debate whether they're even useful at all. I guess I've changed my idea on those. Originally, I was like you. I needed to get all that information down first, and then I can write the character. I need to know all of this, or I can't write the character. And now I think of them more as a brainstorming exercise, or when you hit a lull, or like Sion said with her, you know, interviewing the character, that kind of a thing where you need to know a little bit more about your character, they can help spark some things about them, some characteristics that maybe you weren't sure were there, or something that strikes you, and then you can take off with it. So I look at those more as brainstorming exercises now, you know, although if you're writing a series, like I'm writing a trilogy, you have to go back after you've written everything and plug those things in so you can keep track of it from book to book, you know, their hair color or style in book three or whatever it is. And I use, I don't know if anybody else, but I use Scrivener for that, and that seems to help a lot.
Yay.
That's one thing I need to get better about is using that capability in Scrivener, because I have this weird hodgepodge system of like Google Docs for all my research and all my character sketching, etc. But I know all that stuff is built right into Scrivener. I just like can't divorce myself from the idea that like, oh, I can just hop on the internet anywhere and add it. You know, I can be on my phone and work on the character sketch instead of like having to have my laptop in front of me. But I know we're all on the Scrivener train, but I recommend that to listeners who might not have explored it, because it does have some really powerful tools to help you keep all of these kinds of things organized within the same, you know, document, so to speak, as your actual manuscript.
I do know that Scrivener's got a mobile app now, but I don't know if it syncs.
Oh, interesting. Because, yeah, that's the thing, is the syncing nature of it. You know, I could, that would be really great if there were a way to hook that up, but I'll have to explore that. I know a new version came out not all that long ago, based on when we're having this conversation, but yeah, just gotta find a way to really explore those features better. So, Kristen, I'm actually curious, we've mentioned this handout a couple of times. Is that something that you have available, like online, on your website or anything? Is that something that listeners would be able to have a chance to check out and decide if that's like right for them, or if they want to use it as a brainstorming session?
It's through UW-Madison, Division of Continuing Studies. I'll just double check with them. But yeah, I don't think that would be a problem. I can definitely, you know, throw it on, give it to you, and you can do whatever it is, your magic is, that you do to get it on.
I'll put it in the show notes, or I can always try to create like a download link on the episode itself on the page over at rightscast.net. So we'll see if we can get a hold of that and then put it up for listeners to take a peek at if they would like.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Very cool. Well, on that note then, too, we've talked, you know, there are some character details, there's some core information that we want to know about our characters before we write. So how is it that we go about, you know, doing that brainstorm? We've talked about this handout, but let's talk maybe more about what goes into that. And since it is something that you've got some experience with, I know, because it is a handout you've worked with, Kristen, why don't we start with you and talk, how is it that you go about discovering that? How did you decide what to include on this handout? And, you know, if you ever find yourself stuck on brainstorming one of these attributes, what is it that you like to do to try and find your way into that information?
Well, we've talked a little bit about it. The first thing is just simply to write it. It's amazing how much you can discover just by writing, sitting down and writing. And a lot of times maybe we procrastinate by doing some of these other things and not just putting the, you know, your butt in the seat and writing it down. So that'd be my first thing, is just to write it. But I've also used that book that I quoted, this Alan Watts, the 90-day novel. What I like about that, I am a pantser, as you can kind of guess, rather than a plotter. And so I write from the seat of my pants. I don't know what's going to happen until I write it down. The problem with being a pantser is it usually takes a longer time than a plotter. So my first book took 6 years. My second book took 4.5. And I'm like, this is just taking too long. I want to up that. So this book, the 90-day novel, actually, you work on it for 2 hours a day. And it has questions, 6 questions about that you answer. And they're streamlined, stream of consciousness questions. What did your character like about their father or something like that? And you just write for 5 minutes each one of these questions. And then the last hour and a half is world building. And it's just all kind of ideas of what this world looks like for this character. If you get stuck, there's over like 250 prompts in the back of the book. And so by day 28 or 29, you have basically brainstormed your whole story. And then you start writing your first draft. And so I did this with the first book in my trilogy that I'm working on. And I went through, and on that first day when I started writing, he said, shoot for 1,000 words a day. If you do 750, that'll be okay. But really shoot for 1,000. I wrote 3,000 words just in like an hour. Wow. And it was that way like every day. I mean, I was just amazing how it worked. He also, what's great about it too, is he does do some structure. So he has the three act structure in the back of the book. And he, I forget which day it is, but he'll ask questions about each section of those acts. You know, what should be going on at those times and what is happening with your character? Again, open-ended questions just to get you to brainstorm. So I like the book because it uses my pantser instinct where I can just think this through, but it's making me plan this in that way that works for me. So within 9 months, I had the first draft written, which was really impressive for me. So I like that. It's interesting, though, like Sion said, every book is different, and I've tried that. I tried it with the second book in the trilogy, and it worked pretty well. But I also have to admit that the first book, I'd been thinking about that story for a good 2 years before I actually started writing it. Whereas the second book, I just started, you know, so it's taken me a little bit longer. I am on the second draft now, but it took me a little longer to figure it out. So that book, I think, is really great. Then the exercises, as we talked about, interviewing a character. If you write in third person, try the scene in first person. My main character was really flat in the second draft of my very first book. And so I did interview him too and discover all kinds of things about him. And that's kind of fun. So that, and then these character sketches. So these all are really great ways to discover it. And now I'm in the second draft. And, you know, now that I've got the basics down, which is really what you want to go for, just finish that first draft. Don't worry too much about everything we're talking about. Just get the story down. And it's bare bones and it sucks. And you know that, but nobody else is going to read it. So right. It's okay. Just get it down. When you get to the second draft, then consider more of what we're talking about today. And one book I fell on that I am just in love with right now is Donald Moss. And pretty everybody knows Donald Moss. He wrote the breakout novel and other books. His latest one is The Emotional Craft of Fiction, How to Write the Story Beneath the Surface. And so I'm reading through it, and then I'm going to apply it in this second edit. It is chock full of really great information and exercises. Basically, what his premise is, how do you get readers to go on an emotional journey of their own? So how do you get them to experience what the character's experiencing it, but in their own way? And how you make them feel the emotions that you're trying to put in the story? So we'll see how that works. It's like I say, there's a lot of exercises, and each exercise you could use in a full draft. So it would be like 100 drafts if you went through this whole book to use it. I think it'd be really tricky. But I'm picking out some things that I think will really make a difference and will really give a lot of depth to the story. So tools, all these tools, you know, I recommend them. Whatever works, some things are going to work for one book and some, you know, for one author. It's just you got to try them and see what sticks.
Yeah, I think that's all really good advice. And that's something that I've dabbled in a little bit here and there also, you know, trying to grab a different book on craft sort of in between drafts or in between manuscripts and seeing how that helps change my own mindset about how I'm going to approach writing a set of characters or how I'm going to handle a plot, etc. But let's hop over to Sion quick, too, and get her perspective on this. So what is it, you know, if you know what it is you need to know before writing, how do you go about discovering some of those things that we talked about back kind of in question one?
Yeah, well, like Kristen, I'm more of a pantser. But there is some pre-work, despite, you know, my fear of doing too much pre-work. There is some pre-work that I do. For my main characters, and depending on how prominent the antagonist is, also for the antagonist, I will free write 3 to 5 paragraphs that's like a mini biography that includes like parent relationships and siblings and major life events up to the point where the book starts. And then I will interview them about their time of life goal, their fears, their flaw, and their triggers. Like, and those triggers, you know, when we get triggered in conversation, it's because we've had experiences in the past that are leading us to interpret what is happening right now in a certain way and having a really strong emotional reaction to it that's not necessarily completely about what's happening in this moment, but it's, you know, we might call it baggage. And so I find the triggers to be really helpful because that can derail the character from their goal temporarily, and they can become their own obstacle. So I like to think about that. But for my minor characters, I keep it shorter than that. I just do like one paragraph per minor character with their brief bio, and that also includes their time of life goal and their fears and triggers.
That's all really good stuff to know. And I'm curious, you know, we focus a lot on protagonists, but you kind of opened up this idea of working on our antagonist in this regard also, and then also, you know, filling in the gaps with minor characters, etc. And Kristen, I'm curious to know, what kind of planning, if any, do you do for your antagonist when you're writing a given draft of a manuscript?
That's a good question. Kind of comes the same way with me. Although, having said that, in my first book, my antagonist was a man named Richard Stevens. And then all of a sudden I realized, I don't know, if it was the second or third draft, that no, it really needed to be a woman named Reagan Ernst Collier. And so it did change based on the needs of the protagonist. And so a lot of times when I'm writing the first draft and it feels flat or I'm bored by what I'm writing, I have to think, wait a minute, what's my antagonist up to? And then I realize he's been snoozing and I need to bring him back into the picture. I need to have that conflict. And so then that helps as well. But as far as planning them ahead of time, I really don't. It's just, most of my books are, I don't know if you call them social aspects. There's something that I like to deal with, a theme that I like to deal with. And so a lot of it is handled with that. And the antagonist naturally comes out of that. So not a lot of planning, just the writing and seeing, you know, what they're up to and what they're, what mischief they can possibly cause to the protagonist. What their goals are also, you know, which should be directly against what the protagonist is doing.
And I think that gives us a good segue, actually, into what is the fourth question that was on our docket for this, which was, you know, once we are writing, how is it that we introduce and then slowly reveal character? Because it's something that's a really big challenge, at least in my observation and also in my experience when writing some of my earliest manuscripts, is there's this tendency, you know, you see it, it's the info dump, it's throwing a bunch of backstory in an early chapter, that kind of thing. And those are all, you know, it can really get in the way of telling our stories. So let's maybe talk about strategies for sort of stitching in characterization and the development of that character over time. And why don't we start, maybe we'll keep it here with Kristen for a moment. I'm curious to know, how is it that you go about revealing character over the course of a manuscript?
That depends too on the scenes and what's happening, but there's a lot of great ways you can do that other than just, you know, you meet somebody and you immediately say they have blue eyes and brown hair. That's maybe not the best way to do it. There's one of my favorite ways is through the eyes of another character. So particularly maybe the protagonist, how do other people see that person? How do they relate to that person? It tells a lot about the other character, but also the character that, you know, their impression that's making the only impression. So that's interesting. Dialogue, as Sion said, that's a really great way to understand immediately who this character is, how old they are, where they're from, just how their voice is and how their dialogue is. What kind of actions, what kind of things do they do? How do they treat somebody, say a waitress at a restaurant or the garbage collector or their boss at work or whoever it is? How do they treat other people and what kind of actions they take when they're under pressure? Another way is as a foil, as somebody who shows what the other characters are like. Reflects those other characters. And then I also like to have them, of course, every character should have secrets, just like people do, humans do, we all have secrets. So they should all have that. And so how do they hide those secrets and how often do they reveal them or don't they reveal them in all these little ways? Now, none of this is talked about really describing them, the long flowing hair and the, you know, big broad shoulders or whatever it is. I found in particular when I go to book signings and things, my main character in my book is very, very attractive. And people will tell me what they think he looks like, even though he's there's a little bit of description in there here and there, but I don't go on and on about it. And they all, especially the women, all have a different opinion of what he looks like, because we all have different opinions of what it means to be attractive. And I think that's the beauty of maybe leaving a lot of that detailed description out, and in fact just showing the character through their actions and dialogue and their reactions, those kinds of things, because then you're letting the reader to some extent put their own impression on them. Of course, you want to give them a little bit, I mean, you want to make sure they know that it's a man and not a woman, and you know, maybe about the same age and stuff, but you, it's kind of nice to let them figure things out as far as the character is, you know, how they look and how they are that way.
I love what you're saying there, Kristen. I mean, first of all, I love what you said earlier about showing the characters through other characters' eyes. That's such, I love that strategy. But then when the second part, when you were talking about that, it brought to mind, you know, we can indicate that a character has long hair if they flip it over their shoulder, or if they put it up in a ponytail or something like that, without saying they have long hair. And so showing what they look like through the actions. Another example is, instead of saying she's wearing a button-up shirt and jeans, you can say she pulled on her jeans and threw on a t-shirt or something like that. And so it's part of the action of the scene that also reveals some description.
Well, and I think to add to that too is, why is it important? Mm-hmm. Mention these details when they're important. Why is it important to the story that she's got long hair? Or is there a blood stain on the jeans? You know, and maybe that's when you mention the jeans. You know, those things that's important to the plot, to the characters itself, that's when you really want to add those details.
I'll hop in for a second too, because one of the things that I really like about what you had to say there, Kristen, was this idea of revealing character through how they treat other characters. And I think that idea of characterization through relationships is really great when we can see that inter-character dynamic at play. But another thing that I think is kind of, it's overlooked sometimes, is how a character relates to the culture that they're a part of. You know, do they identify with subculture A or subculture B? Do they see themselves as having to sort of, you know, resist the zeitgeist, or are they with it culturally, for example? Are they following what has been laid out before them? Are they going to obey society's rules? Are they going to contradict them? And I think that using the relationship that they have to culture, and, you know, maybe it's their government, maybe it's the institution of family as it's viewed within the home that they live, you know, all of those relationships, though not explicitly or necessarily always directly inter-character, they can really go a long way into revealing a great deal about our characters as well.
Definitely.
And Sione, you know, I know you hopped in there with your feedback sort of with what Kristen had to say, but I'm curious, you know, what strategies do you have or do you look for when it comes to slowly introducing or revealing character?
Well, I think in addition to what we've already talked about, my main thinking around this harkens back to what we were talking about for the first question. I like to reveal character by, like, showing what they observe. So it's the observation, right? What do they observe? And there's a lot to be said for what they don't observe as well. And then what meaning they make of that. And it's what do they observe? And then when we're talking about actually putting it on the page, because in real life, we make those judgments about what we observe and then have feelings and reaction to it. But at least for me personally, I feel the feeling before I understand what meaning I made of it. And sometimes I never understand what meaning I made of it because I'm just going on and reacting to the next thing. So when it comes to putting it on the page, what they observe in their language, the in-body feeling that they have, so hearts started racing, or they felt their cheeks flush, or whatever it is. And then a sentence or getting some information in there that shows the reader what meaning they made and why they're having that emotional reaction. And then that's a place where we can put in maybe some background information as context for why they're seeing it that way. And then the action that they take or don't take as a result of that. I mean, that can be very revealing about a character too, is what they don't do, what they think about doing and don't do. Or if they just press their lips together, that's an action, but it's kind of an inaction. And so all of this is tied into the NVC stuff I was talking about earlier, but actually I've been reading Lisa Krohn's Wired for Story, The Writer's Guide to Using Brain Science to Hook Readers from the Very First Sentence. It's a long title, but it's a great book. And her chapter 3, I'll Feel What He's Feeling, lays this out really nicely in there, and talks about how to get your reader to connect with your characters and understand what's going on for them, and how to connect the meaning they're making and the actions they're taking to that character's goal at that time. Probably similar to what you were talking about, Kristen, with the Donald Moss book, I'm guessing.
Sounds like it, yeah.
All right. Well, we've discussed a lot here on character. We've got a lot of really new fun exercises, some new book recommendations, a lot that we can dive into when we go back to writing our own pages, and hopefully listeners are feeling similarly right now. But before we wrap it up, let's get any final thoughts we have on character here. And let's start with you, Kristen. What final thoughts might you have on character or characterization that you'd like to leave listeners with?
Well, I'd like to reiterate about not worrying too much about it when you're first writing your first draft. Just focus on getting the story down. Maybe take notes on when you have questions about why the character is doing what they're doing, or how maybe you can develop them a little bit more. But in the meantime, really just concentrate on getting that down. And then after that, if you're stuck, or if you feel like the character's flat, then look to some of these books we've mentioned and some of the exercises we've done. Another thing I forgot to mention with dialogue is Sion had some great ideas, but another one is you can go into the mall and sit down and take notes on people all around you, that however they're saying and they're speaking, and get their rhythms and how they speak, things like that. Take advantage of those tools to help you. But most importantly, I think, is to have fun with it, to enjoy it, to just really enjoy your character and enjoy living with them through this book and many other books if you write a series. Just if you're having fun with it, if you're really enjoying it, and if you're feeling emotional when you write it, then you know it's good writing.
Yeah, I think that's all really great stuff to kind of take with us as we return back to our pages here after we're done listening to this podcast. And then Sion, any final thoughts that you'd like to add on character or characterization?
Yeah, I think very much along the lines of what Kristen said. I think one of my takeaways is a lot of what we talked about is actually instinctive for a lot of writers. It's implicit knowledge. And that's one of the reasons I don't think that detailed character sheets are necessarily very helpful. But I think that all of the things that we talked about today, understanding them can help when it comes to trying to fix problems that have been identified around character in a manuscript. Then you can reflect back on this information and try and figure out, okay, so as Kristen said, if this character is flat or if this scene is boring, then going back to the topics that we talked about and trying to figure out if any of them are the key to fixing that problem. And then I just wanted to say I'm really grateful to have had the opportunity to share my thoughts, and I've learned a lot from both of you. I really enjoy these conversations, so thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Ryan. And it's great meeting you, Sion, too. I'm taking notes as we've been going, too. I'm going to look a couple of things up that you said as well.
Look at that. It's all part of making those connections, interpersonal relationships, intercharacter relationships. We all learn from one another. So I'm really glad that both of you could join me for this conversation. So Kristen, thank you very much. And Sion, thank you as well for joining me on this episode.
That's all for this episode of Novel Approaches. If you'd like to check out that character trait sheet Kristen mentioned in this episode, you can find it at writescast.net/resources. Thanks to Sion Ashleman for co-hosting with me, and thanks as well to our guest, Kristen Oakley, for her insight. Speaking of Kristen, I want to thank her, as always, for her patronage of the WritesCast Network over at patreon.com/writescast. Kristen's patronage of $3 per episode goes a long way into helping the WritesCast Network move toward becoming self-sustaining, and we really appreciate her support. If you'd like to become a member of the WritesCast Network family in exchange for awesome patron rewards, head over to patreon.com/writescast, where you can contribute to the show at $1 or even $2 per episode.
Coming up on the next installment of Novel Approaches, Sione and I will talk plot and structure, so stay tuned for that episode's debut on June 1st, 2018. If you have any feedback on the show or just have questions on character in general, you can find us online at rightscast.net or email us at rightscast@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter at rightscast, or you can find each of the Novel Approaches hosts at @IamRRCampbell and at @WriteLearnDream. Thanks as always for listening. Until next time, you know what to do. Write on and write well.